Hi, welcome to the Amp Hour. I'm Dave Jones from the EEV blog.
And I'm Chris Gamble from Chris Gamble's Analog Life.
And this is good, good. And this is episode number five, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Number five and going strong.
With a bullet.
Yeah, with a
bullet. Awesome. As they say, right up the charts there.
Oh, I don't know about that, but...
Right, but we do have quite a solid audience at the moment, so
yes,
hopefully...
Yes, thank you for tuning in again.
Yes, and subscribing to our RSS feed. And we're trying something new today. Instead of using Skype, we're using Google Chat, which is... because I am here in Sydney, Australia, and Chris is in Cleveland, Ohio. And we have to talk using something, so... Google Chat is, because Skype, you heard in the last post, Skype actually cuts out if we both talk at the same time, which is pretty silly.
Now we can talk over each other as much as we want, right?
There we go, yes.
Yeah.
It works,
right,
and I can actually hear you. There you go, at the same time as talking. How novel.
Yeah.
Gee, so we're giving that a go. So if it dies halfway through, well, blame Mr. Google. There you go.
Yeah,
It certainly seems better than Skype, because it's all web-based, it's just excellent. I love web-based stuff.
Browser-based, yep.
It doesn't use the underlying HTTP. It uses some other technology, but, anything browser-based, I just love. And we're using Google Documents here. We've got some ideas for the show, and they're all listed in Google Documents here in front of us. So there you go.
All we need now is Google sponsorship and we'll be set.
Google sponsorship. Yes, please.
For purchase.
Yes, we will whore ourselves out to the highest bidder. Absolutely.
In so many words, yeah.
Yes. So what do we got today?
Well, a lot of stuff. I guess we could start with shout-outs. Usually we end up starting with shout-outs and that works out.
Shout-outs are pretty good, yeah. I think let's do a rule that we'll start out with shout-outs and we'll just break our rule at blog number 10 or something like that.
Well, rules are made to be broken.
Absolutely. There you go. Who have we got? We've got Tech Dirt.
Yeah. That was one that I added. It was I hadn't really seen it before. Actually, I got linked through from Hacked Gadgets. He's got a big old list of links. And I was kind of just clicking through there today, and Tech Dirt's kind of interesting. It's, a lot of, not necessarily just straight technology stuff, but a lot of, IP issues. Your last your video blog was about IP and whether or not you should get a patent.
Yep.
And this has some really interesting stories on there. The one story I was drawn to was the, what was it about? Sorry about that. Tech-dirt's slow, I guess, but...
I've got it open here, and it's a says 24-hour protections.
Yeah, so just a lot of, IP... Oh, well, he wants to have news feeds be protected 24 hours a day. So if CNN is covering an event 24 hours a day, Anderson Cooper's on scene, they want to be able to say, no, this is protected now under IP or copyright, and you can't link to it. And so it's just kind of like that whole... open internet stuff. And
right. That comes back to the actual Google News, isn't it? Because Google News sucks all the news stories from everyone. And I know there's been lawsuits over that. And I think, Murdoch, all the big players, Rupert Murdoch, aren't happy with Google News stealing their news feeds. And it's crazy.
Every time I run into a site like that, a lot of sites are starting to do where they have a paywall, there's a local business paper like that here, and it's just I just say, why bother? It's like going backwards. Why are we going backwards from open internet to closed internet? So
yeah,
I don't know. This site's good for it. There's a lot of legal stuff on this site, but a lot of technology stuff too. A lot of IP related kind of things. And so I thought that was kind of relevant. And it's got tons of updates. So if you're really looking for a lot of stuff to read, check out Tech Dirt.
Excellent. And the other one is Kickstarter, which is kickstarter.com, one word. And this is pretty exciting. I just got onto it now, and it's brilliant. What it basically is a micro funding site, and you can put if you've got a project or an idea or something like that, you can put it up on here, and people will basically send you money. They will fund you for your particular idea or your particular project. And it's really great. On the main page here, you can see that one. There's one project which has had $200,000 pledged to
yeah,
it.
Yeah. It's like, where does that happen? You know, it's all kind of like grassroots kind of funding, small amounts.
Yeah.
But it's not just giving away money either. There's a lot of it is, hey, I got this great idea. If you give me, you know, some funding at the beginning, you're going to get some kind of special offer for that. So, you know, you might get like, if there's an electronics project, you might get the first rev of the board, or you might get a signed copy of the schematic, something like that.
Mm.
So there's a lot of incentive for people to help fund those kind of things.
Great idea. It's just, yeah, I had no idea such a thing existed, but that's all the rage these days. And outsourcing your work as well. I can't actually remember some of the names of some of the sites. I'm not sure if you've seen those, but you can actually job yourself out on the internet. And if you need something done, if you need a specific, you know, if you need a PCB designed or some code written for your website or whatever, you just go to these websites and you put your job on there and people will bid for your job. And and you can build up an online rep for, you know, for actually doing good work and stuff like that. And there's tons of sites like that. And we won't be everything will be I can see in 30 years time, you know, everything just being done, you know, there won't be a traditional business. You don't have to have a business and a place of work, and you don't have to have employees, full-time employees. You just job out all these little jobs and people actually bid on them and do the work and off they go. And
I don't know. I know one of those is, you know, like Elance. That's like one of the names of the sites. And the electronic stuff, I have a friend who does it, and you kind of have to underbid. That's the only problem with it. You know, you can build up a name and build up a rep through that.
Yeah, I've heard.
That's the only real downside. You got to kind of cut your legs out from under you to start getting jobs. So I don't want to sound like it's totally rosy, but it's cool that you, other than that, you'd have to know people directly who need help, and it's kind of a good way to start building up contacts. So from that regard, it's great.
And then you can bypass the system in the end. If you're doing a good job for them, then they can trust you, and then you can just do your own thing afterwards. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do your own deal. But definitely check it out, kickstarter.com. It's it's pretty cool. Like, there's a combat robot on there which has met, you know, 121% of its funding target of $1,000. It's actually received $1,210 for this combat robot. And very cool.
And like I was telling you before the show, too, there was another one on there that was actually mentioned in one of our links from the last show. We linked to Bree Pettis' site about the Fab Labs. And, you know, there was a list of all these different pieces of equipment you might need in a Fab Lab. And one of them was the laser sawer, which is a laser cutter, kind of like an epilogue laser, where you can cut out plastic pieces, which are awesome. So cool. So much fun to play with. And now this is an open source one called Laser Sawer. And that was actually funded, I think, at least the beginning, was through Kickstarter.
Right.
So you might see the next big thing in there. You could have the next big thing yourself if you need to get a little cash to start up. And just go through and click through, and there's a whole technology section, which is pretty awesome.
Excellent. All right. Well, now I've got some news, I guess. I found this one. Stanford are apparently got this new solar cell technology. And, you think, no big deal. You know, everyone's coming out with a new process, but this is actually a bit of a new paradigm kind of thing. It's not just a tweak on the traditional manufacturing process. It's called, here we go, photon enhanced thermionic emission. And it's basically a semiconducting material, but it's got a thin layer of metal cesium on top. And that means it works at very high temps. And they're claiming up to 60% efficiency on this thing, as well as cheap to manufacture, and, you know, but they always claim that. But
I don't want to speak against Stanford, but I don't know about that. I mean, they're still in the teens, I thought. I mean, I don't think they're
20. No, the University of New South Wales does upwards of 30% now, I think.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's just a matter of cost, really.
It's just a PN junction, right?
Yeah, well, how cheap can you make these things? So, yeah, they're easily doing over 30% in the labs, I think. But the commercial ones, I think, go over 20. And then there's those high temperature ones as well, which which work at, and that's the other advantage of this one. It works at high temperature, whereas a normal solar cell will die at like 100 degrees Celsius. It's, you know, just drops off completely. Whereas this one starts working at 100. You know,
Have you ever worked with solar cells before, like designing with them at all?
Oh, not serious size ones. No, only small ones. You know, we're like, talking.
Oh,
you know,
calculator size kind of things.
Yeah, sort of. Yep, yeah, little tiny calculator ones, but
really fascinating device. I mean, like when you look at it, it really is. I mean, it's like, okay, this is like a diode, you know, PN junction. But when you get in down into the physics of it, and
the actual physics, the quantum physics of how it works.
How you have to bias it and everything. There's a lot of really cool electronics that, I mean, it's not even electronics. It's just about how you kind of run the thing and then how you balance the sunlight and the capacitance involved and all that stuff. And it's just like this, if you try and model it in SPICE, it ends up becoming really difficult to do.
Oh, yeah.
But it's awesome.
Oh, I love solar cell technology. I would, you know, it's definitely the future, and anyone who doesn't think so is just an absolute fool, because these things are getting better all the time. I've watched them go from nothing using calculators, and now it seems like every second home in Australia now is putting solar cells on. Yeah, they're all from China, of course, because we pissed away our manufacturing thing, as I think I said on I think the first blog or something, I talked about that. We pissed it all away, but because we've got new incentives now, government incentives to install solar panels now, so you can do your home for like $2,000. My mum, in her retirement village, she has solar cells now. Her entire retirement village. Oh, I'm really annoyed. I want it.
I know.
When my mum has something cool and I don't have it, that's, you know.
Yeah, she's like telling really you how to put it something. In.
Exactly. Yeah. And the reason I don't do it, though, is because here in Australia, when you, it normally costs about $8,000, $9,000 to install like a full solar system.
Like completely, like with an inverter?
With an inverter, and it's 1.5 kilowatts or something like that, you know. It's quite a big it's a reasonable size system, and it's about $8,000 or $9,000 or $10,000, but all these companies offer them at only pay $2,000 and that's it, because the government offer these renewable energy certificates, which if you install a solar system of a certain value, you get these renewable energy certificates, which then get traded. You can sell to big companies, and they offset their carbon pollution and all that sort of stuff. Okay. You know? So,
I got to say, that's something that seems like Australia might be a couple steps ahead. I mean, obviously, I'm in Cleveland, so
Cleveland, you're probably
sunlight's not. Not too great here, but I mean,
it's not too great, but in Australia it's awesome. So
yeah. But I mean, we don't even have. I mean, those programs aren't here either, just because of the
the
bickering that happens. So
The problem I have with this, and is why I haven't got one, is because I don't want to sell my renewable energy certificates and the general pop, because then it promotes the big polluters. You know, so you're actually giving them a license to generate dirty energy. Really, there's a lot of detail involved in it. It's very difficult to understand the whole market of it. But generally, you're giving your certificates to the big energy polluter, you know, the big, the coal-fired energy, you know, and everything else, and they're getting the advantage from it. So you're basically selling out. I don't want to do that. But that's what most companies do. Most people in Australia don't know about these renewable energy certificates, because the company who installs your system just keeps them for you.
Just take them, right?
And
yeah.
you just sign a bit of paper. Oh, it'll only cost me $2,000. Great. You know, I have my solar system, please.
Free energy,
and they go trade their bloody energy certificates on the market. You know, so you're signing those away, and you don't even know it. So anyway. So there you go.
Take heed, Australia.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing we have here in Australia, we've had it for many years. You can opt in to buy 100% green power.
We have something like that.
You can pay, like I currently pay 60% more on my bill, and I get 100% wind energy. So,
That's impressive, Dave.
Yep.
Yeah. That's good. Awesome. I mean, that's good incentive for you to kind of reduce your energy usage too. So that's nice.
Yeah. And of course, once again, there's sort of like a bit of a scam involved in there. There's a thing where, you know, of course there is, where you can sign up for green energy for free, you know, and 5% of your energy comes from green power, and it only comes from old infrastructure and stuff like that. So yeah, it's all a bit of a con, really. And so people sign up to that en masse thinking, oh yeah, I'm signing up for green power, I'm doing my thing for the environment. Yeah. And it's just a wank, really. So unfortunately. So yeah, you've got to do a lot of research into that's all government controlled and stuff like that.
Speaking of making some PN silicon, what about the chips? We have that on there too. You know how, I don't know how it's been by you, but getting chips out here is still really tough.
In what way? Actually getting them?
Well, like purchasing, you know, trying to get them on the open market, trying to be able to buy like source chips. Have you had any problem with that?
No, we get them from DigiKey and Mouser. What's the issue?
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know. At my work, there's some. I don't want to talk about work here. But I mean, there's other stuff too, where there's like a lot of sourcing issues for trying to buy larger quantities. You know, you talk to all the vendors,
and they're
all having problems, right? Just because they're still getting whipped around by, you know, if Apple's. We talked about that in one episode.
Yes, we have. Yeah. Oh, I haven't had any problems because we don't manufacture high volume where I am. So yeah, we haven't got that problem. I've heard there's a real shortage in caps and things like that. Somebody's still in all the caps again, and it's just like the tantalum capacitor shortage of, you know.
I saw an awesome picture on your forum today about a counterfeit part, and I forget who it was that posted it on there, but there was a picture of a capacitor. You know, it was like a 2200 microfarad, or no, 68,000 microfarad, so 68 millifarad, I think, and then they cut it open. And there was just a smaller capacitor on the inside the casing.
Yeah, I've seen that. I've actually got that photo up on my website somewhere, so I'll post a link to it. It's hilarious.
Oh, it's so brilliant. It's like, who took the time? You think that the time to do that would be like, why don't you just go get some more electrolytic fluid, you know, make your own capacitors at that point, you know? Like,
exactly.
Why are you doing that?
I know, it's crazy. But hey, there's big dollars in that, because one of those expensive low ESR caps might be $5, $10, you know, for a large value low ESR cap.
And if people are having a tough time getting them too, they're going to pay four times that on the black market.
Well, exactly. Market, whatever. And then they'll, you know, and you buy them, you put them in, and they kind of sort of work in your first prototype, and then you ship them out in the field, and they, you know, fail in the first week. And God. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not good. Counterfeit parts. So yeah, I'll definitely put that photo up on the links for the show.
That's a great photo.
It's hilarious. Yeah, I don't know. I just cack myself every time I see it.
I think, like I said, I've been talking to vendors about this kind of thing, and they're still having issues, but I think it's just, it takes so long to start a fab back up where they shut everything down, and so they're still having problems getting this stuff out there, and, you know, you hear lead times, which are, you know, how long it takes to get a part, and they're still way out there, you know, 30 weeks, 40 weeks, and it's like...
Oh, it's crazy, yeah.
I can't really handle that.
Well, that's one of the art of design, that's part of the art of designing high volume products is not only do you have to choose parts that you know are going to be available and you've got to juggle stock and things like that, but you have to have parts that have to choose parts that have a second source and a third source
and things like that, if
you buy some evil, you know, chip that's only available from one vendor, you know, you're screwed. You are reliant upon them to, you know, otherwise your product goes nowhere. If there's no other pin compatible part out there, you're totally screwed. So you know,
yeah, and
if you're designing serious high volume products, then you know you've got to think about not only this run coming up, like the first run. You know, you might be making 10,000 in the first run, but you've got to, you know, oh great, I can buy them from, you know, Mouser or something like that. But you know, three runs down the track in a year's time, will you still be able to get that part? So
very important. Right. And I don't know if people know that. I mean, like, maybe some more of the hobbyist type people out there, but when you buy from Mouser or DigiKey, you're actually paying a pretty good premium. I mean, if you see a chip for $10, you know, you could, if you're buying that in volume, you're probably getting that for $3, $4, maybe even less, depending on how many you buy. So that's actually a pretty interesting, I mean, I'm not sure about the span of our listeners, how much they've experienced that kind of thing, but I never knew that before. I always thought, oh, that's a $10 chip. That's a $10 chip. No, a lot of that money is going straight to DigiKey for holding that part for you. So that is why they can have extra parts.
It's not as bad as it used to be, though. I mean, you know, especially with Farnell's, for example. You know, Farnell's would charge 10 times the price of what you could buy.
Wow.
Yeah, oh, it was horrific. Yeah, if you went to Farnell's 10 years ago, oh, my God. But now they match DigiKey prices, and DigiKey are pretty good. If you're making 10,000 or something and you just need a one reel of parts, then DigiKey have got pretty good prices. Same with Mouser and same with the others. They're, you know, you don't save a huge amount, but yeah, when you go into real high volume, you know, if you're talking like a million of something, then yeah, you wouldn't be buying it from DigiKey.
I think you can see it even more with DigiKey. I mean, DigiKey is still like, so there is a Farnell to DigiKey difference, but I'm saying DigiKey to direct buying from the vendor.
Yeah, it's not as, but that's what I'm saying. Yeah, it's not as high as it used to be.
They're pretty
competitive. If you're making 10,000 of something, it's still completely viable to buy all your parts through Mouser and DigiKey. Yeah, I always thought there was
a big difference.
No, not when you're talking like a single reel or something like that. You know, so a reel might have 5,000 parts on it. So, you know, that'll do a whole run of 5,000.
I'm sure a lot of our listeners are buying parts in the 5,000 at a time kind of thing too, right?
Right, yeah, exactly. Well, buying them at work, you know, we're buying parts and we get them from DigiKey and stuff like that because they're available. Yeah. That's the thing.
Yeah.
As you said, it's such a big deal right now. You don't have a choice often, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a big deal.
Yeah. So,
well, I mean, I guess we have some other news on here about chips too. I mean, I don't know how much more news we want to talk about, but
Let's do it.
The chip startups, actually, they're starting to get money again. You know, there was a big time. There's a time, probably all of 2009 and most of 2010 where they weren't getting any money, but now a new startup is getting some money. So that's
there's
nice.
More venture capital coming through again. The venture capitalists. Yeah. Well, they've never stopped giving out money. They're just getting more frugal, you know, of who they give to, and really, you know, and the only return on their investment they're going to make is when the company goes public. So, you know, anyone who took a public company in the last couple of years, you know, it was suicide basically. So, but it's starting to come back now. Big companies. Who's the big company that's going public?
GM.
NXP.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know.
NXP are going... Oh, right, GM, right. Well, yeah. So the chip vendor, NXP, is going public. Right. I don't know if it's already happened or it's about to happen or something like that, but it's pretty close.
I think that already happened.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you're right. That's a big money.
But
at a certain point, how do you... so if you're at MIT, right, and you're working on new technology, where you really, you know... That's almost one of your only avenues right now.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, we talked last time about making chips at home, and actually one of the commenters on our blog was talking about how printing, like actual printing right now, is getting down to the 20 micron range. So it's almost conceivable that eventually people could be printing chips at home. But that's kind of lagging technology, and this is all leading technology.
Exactly. I read the comments about that on the forum. People go, oh, you can make your own chip. Well, you know, prove it. I think it's bullshit. I'm sorry.
Get an edge chamber in your house.
Yeah, you might be able to print, you know, something down to 10 microns or something, but, you know, that doesn't help you. You know, sure, you can print the mask, but you've still got to make the damn chip, and you've got to make it reliable, and you've got to, you know, it's just, no, I'm sorry, you know, maybe I don't see that happening for foreseeable future, which is at least the next 10 even 20 years, making a chip at home. There's a reason they have these fab plants, you know, even like an old fab plant from 20 years ago that was manufacturing, you know, a 20 micron, you know, a large feature size. Those fabs still cost, you know, $50 million.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and they still make a ton of money now too.
And so. Churning out all these, you know, old, you know, you can still, you know, they still make 74 series chips. You know.
Yeah, so, I don't think they're at 20 micron anymore. I got to say, I think they're down in the
the 250
size. Nano.
Right.
But there still is a lot of nano. Yeah. I mean, like 250 nano, I think, is pretty common still. Where a lot of analog fabs, you know, I look at those sometimes, and they're still running up in the, because they don't need to be down in the 90 nano stuff. They can still make 4-inch wafers, making 180, 250 nanometer feature sets, and you know, making power chips, and the die itself is maybe half a millimeter by half a millimeter across, and you can get 200 chips on a wafer, even at 4 inches, even having people sling them
exactly
manually, and you still make money. And there's a lot of demand right now, so there's not really any reason not to do that.
Yeah. Exactly.
So,
but consider it a challenge, people. There you go. Some people said, is that a challenge? And yes, it damn well is. I reckon, you know, you can't do it viably, but prove me wrong, please.
Yeah. Well, you know, as soon as someone starts growing polysilicon in their house, we'll see. I mean, I have a little bit of background in that stuff, and there's some nasty chemicals there. But if you're doing it, it is awesome. So,
it's pretty awesome. And I'm sure you could do it as a, you know, as a showpiece, you know. So you'll see it at some fair,
no,
you know. You'll
see
it, I'm sure you'll see at the next Maker Faire, you know. Here's a way to make your own chips. And
just a beginner, come on in. Try out dry etching.
Yeah.
Watch your fingers.
Exactly. Wear these 2-inch thick gloves, Oh, dear. Anyway, yes, consider it a challenge. Go forth and produce, people.
Yes, and we'll try out the chip for you as soon as you make one.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, there's another link that we saw was actually from Marjorie Connor from EDN. She linked through to a story. We were talking about renewable energy before, but there's a story from the UK about how little people understand. Most people who are most vehemently for, I guess, I don't know if you can say vehemently, but the ones who are most gung-ho about green energy usually have the least idea about how to do it, and just kind of the scale of how hard it is to produce energy. And it's, I mean, it's a pretty good article. We'll link through to it, but I don't know. I liked it.
and it also comes back to those, you know, companies who are basically trying to scam people. And I've exposed one of them. It was the, you know, the Wi-Fi energy harvesting device, you know, and things like that. And people think, oh, wow, you know, I can charge my mobile phone through Wi-Fi energy. And people just don't understand the power scales involved. And, you know, people get suckered in.
A milliwatt is very different than a kilowatt, even if they do rhyme.
And it's just, it's just a huge difference. And, people get sucked in all the time for products like that. And, well, it's I'll keep exposing them. If you've seen any dodgy products like that, please send it to me. And, I'll certainly do my bit. That's for sure. And
well, you had go ahead.
And the there's a little article we've got here that the design news people have just announced the TI launch pad. Well, you know, they're a bit behind
the times,
aren't they?
Better luck next time, guys. Yeah. Better luck next time.
Yeah, exactly.
They're good people. I mean, I've talked to Chuck Murray before. He's a real nice guy. But, you know, it's just interesting seeing how the hobbyist market kind of latched onto that right away. And I'm not even sure how they announced it, but now it's kind of getting to the industry stuff. And I don't know if there's as much value for industry, but time will tell.
Probably not. No, it's really the beginner, hobbyist, entry level stuff, you know. And somebody on the forum, on the forum, I think, mentioned that it's not available anymore. They've sold it out, and they're not replacing it or something. I haven't checked.
Oh, really?
Though, so I don't know. I could be talking out my ass there. So don't quote me on that.
Well, it's still out there, hopefully, but if not, I'm sure you can get them secondhand. I know a lot of people ordered 2 or 3 because they were so cheap, so I'm sure
I ordered 3 of them. Yeah, I've got 3. I was going to do like a mock unboxing of it, but I haven't gotten around to it yet, so
Maybe in the future.
Maybe I'll do that. And speaking of design news, that brings me on to a rant. Nothing to do with design news, but EDN. Are they? They're not the same mob, are they? Design News and EDN?
No, they're different.
No, I think they're different. I think so. Yeah. Anyway.
I mean, they're all tech magazines, so.
Here we go. Rant time, right? I got, you know, I'm on the EDN email list for some, you know, for various things, and they spam me. They're one of the most spammiest companies, EDN. You go to their websites, pop up. Oh, God.
It's not the 90s.
It's annoying, but anyway, so they came through, oh, there's a survey, you know, EDN are doing a survey. Oh, great. You know, but hey, you can win an iPad, right? Okay, cool. And they said, oh, it'll only take a couple of minutes of your time. So I thought, great. Okay, I get on there, start doing the damn survey. I know, I'm, you know, idiot for believing them, right? And, you know, right. 25 minutes later, I'm still doing the freaking survey.
Well, it's an iPad, Dave. I mean, you gotta work for it.
I'll put up some of the... I'll have to link in. I got a screen capture of some of the questions, and it's a big grid matrix kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
The matrix,
what are you in charge of
question.
Purchasing?
Oh, my God. It's ridiculous. And it's run by Canon Communications, so I'll give them a serve and the KMPS group, whoever the hell that is, but your surveys are shit. Really?
Oh.
There you go.
Oh, my. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Stay away from Dave.
Oh, here we go. To add insult to injury, at the end of it, when you're filling out your details to win your iPad, of course, they assume everyone's just in the US. They don't even have a country, do they, to put you there to where you're from. And I bet you if you read the terms and conditions, it's only...
Yeah, you probably can't even win.
I can't even enter it, and they don't tell you that. Oh, so, I'm
like,
pissed off.
Oh, sorry, you
bloody
talk
hell.
Funny.
Bloody EDN. And I sent them an email telling them on how they're dickheads.
Yeah. Well,
anyway,
now it's on the radio show.
It's on the radio show. There you go, EDN.
If anyone ever hears it, they'll never talk to us again. Oh, well, there goes EDN sponsorship. Yep.
Not a problem.
I don't know. It's interesting because there's so many. I mean, there are, like, if once you have, you know, a professional position, they just, like, they clamor for your information, you know, because they just package it back up and sell it to vendors because they're hoping to get into your design. And
there's a huge market in that, selling, you know, niche information like that, so.
Yeah. I mean, because it's people that are actually buying parts for new designs, so, I mean, there's a lot of good, don't get me wrong, I mean, there's a lot of cool information in a lot of those tech magazines and, you know, a lot of people that are listening could probably really benefit from it because there's good tech articles and stuff like that, but
you pay the price, don't you? So,
well, sometimes it's kind of like an old media, new media kind of thing. I don't know if I don't think we're new media, but you know, it's just like they've operated the same way for a lot of years, and I think they're suffering because of it. But
we're actually social media, I believe, is the. Is the new industry wank word for it. Where, so my video blog is social media. This radio show is social media because it's a podcast. And
I was listening to Leo Laporte about that today. He was
right.
They post their stuff Sunday night, and he was complaining about social media too, and just kind of how it's a, you know, you're kind of in your own little world, really. I mean, like, to be honest, like we've talked in other shows, if you and I were just talking and we posted this stuff and no one listened to it, we'd never really know. You know, there's a lot of stuff like that with like Twitter and stuff where people shout stuff into the abyss and they're like, hey, did anybody hear me? No.
That's right.
Sad.
It's a one-way push medium, you know. It's a...
Right.
Yeah, right. I think that's the term for it, push media. Yeah, you just push info out there and you don't get any feedback at all. So,
Well, all we want to do is talk about electronics and engineering and bitching about people,
bitching about the market and other things. Yeah, we do a lot of kind of, I guess, off topic stuff, don't we? Because if you're wondering why we don't talk about, you know, electronics design, you know, because you can't do that on the radio. It's very difficult to go, oh yeah, I built this new circuit. But then, you know, when it's not visual, you can't, you know, you don't have the schematic in front of you. So you can't talk about how a schematic, you know, how a circuit works really without that visual thing in front of you. So
only there was a video.
If only there was a video blog to do that. Somebody's
maybe
gonna
someday
start one of those.
Maybe someday.
Yeah. I reckon there's huge money in that. It'll make you rich.
Doubtful.
Yeah. Doubtful. Yes. Doubtful. Exactly.
But, well, speaking of engineering, I wanted to point something out. I got a link the other day about women in engineering, which you know, I think you said you had seen it too, and they're actually
casting
a show. I'd
seen it. We meant to talk about this last show, but we didn't get around to it. I really want to talk about this one. Go for it.
Right, and well, I mean, like, obviously the engineering profession is a little skewed towards the male gender, but you know, there's a lot of good stuff that's out there for kind of encouraging women to enter engineering. Obviously, girls when they're getting interested in it, but like, you know, like Make Magazine or all the Make stuff, you know, like teaching children when they're young about the interesting things you can do with electronics and all the you know, just curiosity about the world, stuff like that, and just even STEM, not necessarily engineering, but, you know, science, technology, engineering, and math. That stuff, getting them interested in the beginning is obviously a very good push, and that Absolutely. Is gender neutral. But now there's this new reality show.
Yes, reality TV.
Electronics
has come to reality TV, or engineering's come to reality TV.
It looks horrible. I don't even know where to start with it. It's called nerdgirls.com, and they're casting a new show. If you happen to be a female who's interested in being on reality TV about engineering.
If you want to get your head on telly, yep, there you go. All you need is a set of tits and you're on. There you go.
Oh, boy.
I've offended lots of people, I'm sure.
Oh,
but
boy.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it's going to come down to. Like, they're casting, like, supposedly nothing to do with your interest in engineering. It's more you're a woman outside of engineering. You know, what are you into outside of it? Style and what do you do outside of engineering? Well, you know, it's kind of, I guess, to prove the stereotype that you can be, you know, a traditional girly type girl and be into engineering at the same time. Well, is that needed? I mean,
I think it's an identity thing. So it's I can be a strong woman and still be an engineer, which is very true. But the way they're going, I mean, they have a promo video for it, and they're like showing clips of women shopping and going to get their hair done. It's like,
exactly.
I don't want to see that show. Who's the one from? Discovery Channel. Yeah, the show on Discovery Channel. Jamie and Adam Savage.
Oh, MythBusters.
Oh,
Kari
God,
Byron.
What a brain
Kari
fart!
Byron.
Oh, that was such a brain fart. And so, what's her name? I'm sorry. What's the lady's name on that?
Her name is Kari.
Oh, Kari. Okay.
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, like, she is, you know, doing really cool stuff. So why
she
not just
cool.
show that kind
yep.
of stuff? You
know,
why not have contextually, yes, this is a woman doing really cool things. And then it's like, it's not as in your face, oh, you have to be styling and profiling kind of thing.
Exactly.
I'm shopping. It's like, oh, come on. It's like women do really cool engineering things every day. Why not just show off the engineering thing?
Exactly. And you don't need to show off that they can dress up and go to, you know, freaking ball or something like that. It's ridiculous. I don't like that at all. And you just know that they're going to choose the hot looking ones, right? They're going to choose the bimbos, the hot ones to show, oh, look, you can still be a really traditional, you know, kind of... Yeah, it's hard to explain, but it's crazy.
If I was going to watch that show, I would watch it for the engineering stuff. And maybe it's obviously
absolutely.
It's not marketed towards me, but why not just show some awesome engineering things?
Absolutely.
Have it as a group of women doing that. And then contextually, young ladies who watch that show, they'll be like, oh my God, they're doing really cool things.
Exactly.
Why does there need to be this style element to it? So,
yep. It's crazy. Yeah. I mean, every girl knows that. Well, you know, I can still be a girl. I can still, you know, go out and do
girly life outside
type
of work,
things
you know.
Without... Yeah, it's just nuts. It's just, you know, something you enjoy doing. It's, you know, it's either a hobby or it's a career or something else or both. And it's just, it's nuts. But you know that's the way it's going to go. And they've got some, and they've got some clips on there of... You know, of people. And Nerd Girls, actually, I've actually seen them before. I think it might have been through the IEEE website or something. They've got videos or something. There you go. Yeah. But they might be useful for something. I don't know. I saw it somewhere. I saw their videos. And Nerd Girls has apparently been around. It's a group. It's a group of girls, engineering students. And they're from some university. I don't know. There's so many universities in the US, but... Some universe, it's not one of the big name ones, I don't think. But they form this group called Nerd Girls. It's quite a few years ago, and they work on, you know, they were building a solar powered car or something.
Oh, that's awesome.
I watched like a 15-minute doco on it, and they were, you know, how they spent years building this, you know, and at the end of the documentary, they still hadn't finished it yet. So, but anyway, Nerd Girls was this existing group, and I guess some, you know, TV channel or, you know, is it. Who's the channel? Who's the channel?
I thought it was Internet TV.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, anyway, somebody's behind it. They've latched onto it and gone, let's get some hot-looking chicks with boobs on there, and you know, and it's like, no, I really enjoyed seeing the you know, the other women just doing real engineering. That was
right.
That was so much so, better, you know.
I mean, I think a lot of it might be like the Hollywood style. I mean, like you look at Hollywood style shows and stuff like that, and it obviously a lot of the Hollywood style shows they favor attractiveness over other things anyway. So
yeah.
If that's the case, they're screwed from the beginning. But I think at least my final rant on it, or my final point, is I'm not trying to hate on women in engineering, because I think it's a really wonderful thing. But I think this show is going about it in completely the wrong direction.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah, you got. I mean, start getting young ladies interested from an early age, doing, you know, projects and general interest and stuff like that, and change the paradigm by, you know, having these women come up through engineering because they love it, not because they are in it and, oh, well, you know, anyone can do this and don't worry, you can be stylish too. No, that's wrong. I think you have to do it with general interest and like, you know, that inquisitiveness that you would watch in a program like Mythbusters or something like that, you know, so... Oh, man, I got worked up over that. I got to say.
I can hear it. There we go. Yeah. Chris is going internally berserk.
God, yeah, I guess so.
Oh, there you go. But, you know, I love Kari Byron. You know, I think she's so cool, you know. And you've seen her on Mythbusters. She's been on there for donkey's years now. And she's got all these spin-off shows now. And
oh, really?
Yeah, she's doing some kids' science show now, where she does science projects for kids and things like that. You know, and she's just really cool. And she doesn't try and be, you know, some stylish chick. She's just, you know, she's just doing cool stuff, just like Jamie and Adam and the other Mythbusters. But yeah, she's female. Well, who cares? Yeah, she's a bit better to look at than Jamie, for example.
who isn't, right?
But still, well, yeah, I can't talk, but it's just cool. Just do cool stuff and people will like it. That's it. You know, you don't need to be, you know,
seriously, just blow some stuff up and you'll be set.
Yeah, just blow some shit up. That's it. Yeah. That's the way to do it. Yeah. And onto our, we've got another rant as well. I think that's enough of girls there. Let's go on to how that it's a fundamental issue, I guess, in the not just in our industry, it's probably in many industries. How that the people who get paid the most are not the engineers who develop the actual product. It would be the people who market it and sell the product. So if you're designing an oscilloscope or something, you won't get near, you know, you'll get paid half of what the guy selling the oscilloscope gets. You know, it's just
right. And it's a good example. Even like you think about movies, you know, like you could be, I mean, obviously not like the biggest movie stars, but a good example would be like say you're in the Blair Witch Project, that crappy little movie that came out you know, $60,000 and they made millions. Well, if you don't have it in your contract at the beginning that, you know, it's going to all come back to you, you know, as like some percentage of the sales, then you're screwed. But if you're the, you know, the executive that quote unquote discovered this movie, you get $3.4 million. Why wouldn't you discover this awesome movie that you did nothing to do about it? I mean, like,
what can you do?
Talk about Chris getting worked up today. I mean, man, I gotta overload this microphone. Yeah.
He's in a frenzy.
But
that's just the way the world works. I mean, you know, I don't know if there's any way to change that, really, to fundamentally change, you know, just the way the market works. And
You could, though. I mean, you could write it into a contract, right? So, you know, it would have to go both ways, though. So you think about like even stock traders and stuff like that. They always just get the upside. They never have the downside where they get punished for bad performance. But, you know, you could do that with a product kind of thing, where if you're designing an oscilloscope, and you have a team of 20 people, everybody on the team gets 0.5% of revenue. Well, not revenue. I mean, maybe revenue. Maybe if it's such a ridiculously awesome new product that maybe it would be in a contract like that, you know?
I can see that only working at small companies, though. You know, if you're working at Agilent or somebody like that, or Fluke, you know, I can't see that happening, you know? It's just, that's big company mentality, you know, and it's just, there's a pecking order, you know, and
right. Well, it's distributed. I mean, there's distributed load and distributed, you know, who's working on what, so that obviously hurts a lot too. But
and those people do their job too, you know, marketing, sales. You can bag them all they like, but they've got a job to do. But yeah, when they're earning twice as much as the guy who actually designed it, you know, you've got to say, well,
right, well, it's
you
a
know.
Question of who's I mean, where's the value there? And there, I mean, obviously you got to sell it, and there's that happens with a lot of startups where they don't even think about that. They're like, oh, well, we'll just have a great product. Well, yeah. Okay, maybe, but you got to sell it. But on the same side of things, it's like, well, is it, I mean, is how the world works right now, is that how it should always be? I don't know. I mean,
yeah, well, like, you know, there's ways to change it, you know, go to small companies and yes, you will get a percentage, but it's usually done via stock options or something like that.
Yeah,
you know? It's
yeah,
usually
true.
Done by other mechanisms. Like some companies offer a return. If the company makes a profit, then all the employees get a cut of the profit. You know, there's a shareholder,
right.
There's a employee return, you know, kind of thing. And that's right. Fairly popular in the industry for employees to, you know, and then it's hard. Well, how do you scale how much everyone gets, you know? I mean,
well, yeah, that is too.
Yeah. And, at my previous company, they did that. I think they did that reasonably well. Like, if the company made a profit at the end of the year, then, everyone got a fixed amount as a base. And then on top of that, it's scaled X percentage based on your salary. So if you earn, you know, so everyone would get, say, you know, $1,000 or something. And then on top of that would be a percentage of your salary. So if you earn $100,000 a year, you'll get more than a guy who only earns $50,000 a year. And the reasoning behind that is that the person who earns more typically has more responsibility within the company and... So, you know, so they're trying to make it fair in that they try to scale your worth within the company based on your salary and then add that to a fixed base, which I thought was, you know, quite a reasonable way to do it. I can't think of
yeah,
any
that's
better
good.
Way,
I mean,
really.
You know, I don't know. So. Maybe that doesn't happen everywhere, but I mean, yeah. It's just a matter of when you're actually getting a commission for a sale, right? That's different than, you know, you
yeah.
can't get,
yeah.
How do you pay a commission back to someone who designed it? You know, that
yeah, exactly.
Obviously that... The way that you were just talking about is a good way to do it, but anyways, it's
I don't see any solution there. It's one of those age-old problems that, well, you know, you get into the engineering for the love of it. If you're in engineering for
that's
the
right.
money, get out.
That's
now.
Right.
Seriously,
yep.
I mean,
yep. run for your life.
You can earn a decent living in engineering, you know, but I mean, you know, you're not going to get rich through it.
No,
that's for sure. So.
And if you really want to make a lot of money, I mean, you do what I wanted to talk about next, which is, you know, make and produce and market and sell your own product.
Do your own stuff. Yeah, I just
if you do
I
everything,
just
you get all the money.
Yeah, exactly. There's a fair bit. You know, there's a lot of people out there who think that you have to, you know, go full time at something like that. You know, and.
Right.
And that's just guaranteed to fail. If you're just start out, you know, part time
yep.
in your garage and, you know, and just let it build and then there's zero risk, you know. I just laugh at all these people who, you know, quit their job and they borrow money and they go and get, you know, they go and rent a shop somewhere and they, you know, like the odds of failing are like seriously like 90%, you know, of businesses
yeah,
like that
yeah.
fail in the first 5 years. It's just crazy.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It's your odds are
because cash flow is such a hard problem.
That. Cash flow yeah. and yeah, but if you just start off, you know, if you buy $500 worth of parts and you sell, you know, $2,000 worth of, you know, you sell 100 of your little products, cost you $500 and you get a $5,000 return, well, you made some money. That funds your
yeah.
next production run and your next product and so on. And
yeah.
it just
builds. And to be realistic about that, I mean, the $5,000 or the $4,500 you're making there, you're probably working the equivalent of, you know, $18,000 worth of money, you know.
Oh yeah,
because
yeah. There's
you're working
a lot of
your garage
labor there.
At night.
Yeah,
yeah. It's in a, and that's got to be the labor of love kind of
labor
thing of, it,
of
so.
Love kind of thing. Yeah, don't. Yeah, yeah. yeah That's the delusion you get is that oh yeah I'm making all this money, but no, look at the amount
no.
of, you know, if you went out and actually worked a second job, you'd probably get paid more. So
yeah, wash some
yeah.
dishes somewhere.
So
yeah.
you do it for the love of it and do it for the thing down the track where, you know, you could possibly potentially take it full time, you know, once it takes
yeah,
off.
Yeah, why not, right?
Things like that. Or you just have a hobby income. I mean, here in Australia, I don't know what it's like in the US, but there is no tax on hobby income. So
how's
if you
defined?
Do something as a hobby, it's a very,
yeah.
it's a bit of a blurred term, but it basically means no reasonable expectation to make a profit. So, you know, it depends on how you want to go
about
it.
So just keep your expectations low.
Keep your expectations low and stuff like that. Or, you know, but you can always argue that, you know, if you took it as a full, you know, you might earn, you know, $20,000 a year from something like that. But you might argue, no, I've put so much time, effort,
right,
and passion into it as a hobby that really, right, if I did it full time and charged, you know, if I set up a company and charged and paid myself a wage, I'd be making a loss every year. And the tax department doesn't like that, so they'll go, okay, it's just hobby. Okay, it's just a hobby, you know. So there are,
right.
You know, you're allowed to earn a certain amount, which is really quite good. So you can start off there and, yeah, all the more reason to get something published, because then you can say, oh, look, I got it published in a hobby magazine. It's a hobby.
There you go.
So
there you go.
Little backdoor tip there.
Well, that's just for the Aussies out there, right?
Yeah, I think so.
So I had an idea, actually. Jeff Kaiser from Mighty Ohm, he had commented on our site that he wanted to hear more about actual projects. And so I was actually thinking about a new idea for one. It was kind of, well, not kind of, it was straight up inspired by the Lady Ada project. They're doing a PID controller for the reflow oven.
Yep.
Have you seen that?
Yep.
And they're doing that actually with AC power, because they're going to do, like, you know, 600 watt, 200 watts.
Oh, yeah, serious business. Yeah, yeah.
Right. So I wanted to do one with just a pretty simple thing, just Arduino. I wanted to do a FET, you know, driving a FET, and then just through a copper wire with a known, with a voltage source. And just have, then have a temperature controller back to the Arduino, and then use a PID or similar to try and control that. And basically, you would kill a battery or a power source, whatever, but you would know the temperature of this wire, and so you could add little temperature add-ons wherever you needed to. So if you needed to balance out something like the Lady Ada project or anything, or any other kind of temperature source, you'd burn out a lot of power probably, but, you know, you'd this would be a DC solution as opposed to AC. So
right,
what do you think about that?
Excellent. Well, as I always say with project ideas like this, don't talk about it, do it. Just go out and do it. You know, there's one thing, yeah, and not just as an aside, you know, there's one thing I hate is people just talking about stuff, you know, just, geez, go and do it. Jump into it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Head first.
Well, that's next.
Go for it. There you go. Well, then.
All right.
Excellent.
Any updates on your secretive project?
No, I'm working on a project, and I lose interest a lot, and I only do like an hour spurt here or there.
Just do it, Dave.
I know. It's hard to get it finished. I've got many things on the boil, and I jump around like a hot potato, so I do lots of things. And
this American keeps calling you every day.
Here. I'm not sure if you can hear it, but yeah, somebody's trying to call me.
That's the government saying it's actually not hobbyist income.
Jesus, the tax department monitoring me.
They're listening in before anyone else.
Yeah.
Let's see what else we had on here. Transformers versus switchers I had on there. Do you do a lot of transformer design?
No, not much. I haven't done transformer design for quite a few years now. You know, I did a bit as part of, you know, custom DC to DC converters and stuff like that. Certainly not big power transformers, as I've said before. I'm not really into big power.
Oh, you mean like
things like that?
Oh, like AC, like
big, huge, a 500 watt, you know, switching power supply or something
I'm
not really into that sort of thing.
Oh, no, I just meant like just straight power transformer, because it seems like the trend is moving towards switchers. You've talked about switchers on your show on EEV blog before, but, you know, a lot of the ways people did that before is you'd, you know, get power from the wall, either 120 here, or is 220 there, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so, and then you'd switch it down, or you'd put it through transformer, get your turns ratio, and then put it into a rectifier, and then into some caps.
Standard filter cap, standard linear power supply stuff, yeah.
Right, yeah, so, I mean, and that still happens a lot, and but, you know, as we move towards mobile-type stuff, there's no chance you're going to have a transformer in there unless you're carrying it in a backpack.
Yeah, exactly. Well, interestingly, the government actually banned those type of plug packs here in Australia. It's ridiculous.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, those are really bad. I mean, those are
they're really inefficient, but there's no reason to ban them. I mean, it's just
well, no, there is though. There is a reason to ban them, because When there's nothing. So say, you know,
I know the standby power and the whole energy thing, but you know, there's more things you can spend, you know, you can spend your energy on, you know, like actually designing good switches and just let the market naturally take over. There's no reason to actually ban them. Like they banned light bulbs. They banned incandescent light bulbs here in Australia.
Yeah, they do that here too.
It's ridiculous. But and they just put a blanket ban. Thinking that, oh, they're all the same. And then they don't realize that, you know, some things you can't put a compact fluoro in, you dickhead.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
So it's just when you start banning stuff without understanding all of the issues, you know, it's just crazy, really.
Well, I don't disagree with that, but I think the transformer thing, at least, is because, you know, you think about if every person in Australia had a cell phone and it came with a charger.
I know, it's a cumulative, I've mentioned this on forums before. I've gone through and done the math and things like that. I've measured some of the new Energy Star compliant switching converters, and they have a standby power of 0.1 watts, which, you know, I think it's fantastic, you know.
But that's pretty good.
I just have a problem with banning the old ones. I just think it's stupid, you know, because there are niche applications where they're going to be useful, and to ban them and not understand those niche applications where a switch is not, you know, you can't use a switcher, you know, they aren't a universal solution, you know,
I agree with that completely, because you're right, kind of giving that blanket ban is not a good idea, but I think that in general, you know, like in terms of what people are going to do, and especially what China is going to do in terms of what they ship with a product, it's a hell of a lot cheaper for them to throw in a 30-cent transformer wall wart that, you know, they ship with every other phone, you know, they ship with old Motorola Razors that they're actually buying in the black market, than to go out and design a new power switcher. So I think that's what they're really targeting. I'm not really coming down on one side or the other for banning stuff, but I think, you know, you got to try and control the cheapo manufacturers. That's what you're really trying to influence in the end. Obviously, the niche stuff gets really hurt. So.
Yeah, it does, and that's the problem I have with it. But yeah, there you go.
It's interesting though. The other thing I want to say about transformers is, you know, there's a lot of, you know, like you look at engineers from 40 years ago, or even just hobbyists and stuff, right? That was like a huge thing, because, you know, you really had to do that stuff. That was one of the main sources of power, because switching chips just weren't an option. And so there's a lot of knowledge there, and now you look out there and I took E&M kind of courses in school, but, you know, like just in terms of the general knowledge about designing a transformer or even winding your own transformer.
Oh yeah, it's a lot of.
It's not there anymore. Yeah. So it's interesting and it's useful. It's really useful to have, because you can do a lot of cool stuff. But I think that knowledge is kind of drifting off to maybe the dark corners of the internet.
Yeah, it's a pretty specialized knowledge actually designing, you know, a transformer for your custom app, you know. It's actually getting it right and making it as most efficient as you can, and at lowest cost of the smallest size, and there's lots of trade-offs, and, you know.
Right.
And, yeah, it is complex business, and it's a very niche kind of field. So, I think your average engineer wouldn't, you know, have an average electronics engineer wouldn't have a clue how to design their own transformers from scratch. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just, you know, it's one of those niche things that you traditionally don't have to do that often, you know, if you're into that sort of thing. Because, you know, you can buy off-the-shelf ones. You can buy complete switch-in modules and stuff like that.
Right, and that's the new standard, because there's always companies that are, like, built into that market now, where they really want you to buy them.
Yep. Yeah, and they do it too. Well, you know, and there's, you know, it's one of those things you've got to put twice as much work into it to gain an extra 1% efficiency in something like that, you know. So the amount of
returns
and tweaking it, you know, and getting it just right, and the interwinding capacitance and all that sort of stuff, and getting it, you know, there's an art to actually, there's an art to getting there. Anyone can do it and make it work, but, you know, is it going to be as efficient as it can be? You know, there might be people who, you know, specialize in, you know, eking an extra, you know, 1% efficiency out of a DC to DC converter design. And, you know,
that's where the market's going, you know, like Energy Star and all of those other regulations, that's going to be a very needed skill in the coming years too.
Yeah.
So, you know, learn your transformers, learn your switchers, people. We need designers in here right now.
We do indeed. And that's about all we have for the show today. because our one hour's up. Our amp hour is up. Our 3,600 coulombs are up.
Which I spelled wrong last time, apparently. I spelled it wrong on the website.
Yes, you did. Coulomb. It's one of those tricky words, you know, it's got O's and U's and stuff, you know.
Right, like color, right, Dave?
Yeah, color, exactly. Yes.
Color.
Kalua. Yes.
That's right.
Yeah, there's a few fundamental differences between Yankees there. Color is one of them.
Ah, yes. Like how you say patents.
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 Patent.
Patent. Patent. Patent. Yes. I'll have to ask my brother-in-law, because he's a patent attorney. I wonder how he says it. So he's Australian, but he's a...
You just said patent there. You said patent. Patent. You didn't say patent.
Well, I probably switch between them depending on the...
Yeah.
You know, the intonation of my sentence or whatever, but yeah.
USA. USA.
There you go. Well, thanks for joining us, everyone.
Yes, thank you.
Been another good one.
We really enjoy you listening, so tell your friends, please.
Yes, please, and we'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.